The Mythology of North America by John Beerhorst, 1985. The oral literature of the American Indians, transcribed and translated, is a treasure house for all American readers and writers. The only literature entirely rooted in this ground, the only words that, like corn and sequoias, begin here. Instead of being treated as primitive curiosities that only an anthropologist could love, Native American prose and poetry are increasingly appreciated and reverenced by non-Indians, as a vital link to a lost past, of course, but more importantly, as a living literature. After all, most of it was written down between 1850 and 1950. The plots, the forms, the traditions may be ancient, but the actual pieces are no older than the novels of Dickens or the poems of Yeats. John Beerhorst, who has given us excellent selections of this oral poetry and prose in The Sacred Path and other collections, presents now a systematic overview of one type or branch of literature in The Mythology of North America. What makes a myth different from a legend, a folktale, a story? Beerhorst has a notable gift for making such complex and much-argued distinctions clear by using the material to explain itself. In North America, where more than 100 native languages are still spoken and oral traditions once passed freely between cultures, storytellers have tended to divide narratives into two basic categories. Typically, the Eskimo used to speak of old stories and young stories. Among the Winnebago, stories were either Wiccan, sacred, or simply Warak, narrated. To the Pawnee, the distinction was between true and false. The second of the two categories, which varies from tribe to tribe, can refer to fiction, nonfiction, or a mixture of both. Mainly, it sets up a contrast with the first category, which, whether defined as old, sacred, or true, corresponds to the English word myth. Later on, Beerhorst mentions that among the Tlingit, there are two kinds of stories, Tlagu, of the long ago, and Chicalnik, it really happened. What he is concerned with in this book are the Tlagu, the old, sacred, true stories. Their truth is of that order which may be ranked above or even opposed to factuality. That they are old may mean that they are agelessly young and meaningful. As for their sacredness, it is not always of the kind monotheists easily or willingly recognize as such. From De Angulo, Beerhorst quotes an Achomawi tale-teller. What is this thing that the white people call God? They are always talking about it. It's goddamn this and goddamn that, and in the name of the God, and the God made the world. Who is that God? They say that Coyote is the Indian God. But if I say to them that God is Coyote, they get mad at me. Why? For people willing to take that question seriously, those willing to take risks of the mind, the pleasure of these myths will often lie in the way they revalue the world, cleansing the doors of perception. Like all great works of art, the great myths change you. Anyone who has attentively read or heard such a story as Archie Finney's Coyote and the Shadow People will know that the Greek myth of Orpheus is only one version of a deep and powerful human theme, and will have enriched their understanding of such matters as the landscape of the Western Plains and married love and death. Imagination is, after all, an intensely practical activity. This Coyote story can be read in full in Finney's Nez Perce texts, and with commentary by Gerald Ramsey in Traditional Literatures of the American Indian, edited by Carl Krober, or in Ramsey's own recent Reading the Fire. Beerhorst gives almost no full texts or tellings. This is not a collection of myths, but a survey, a guidebook to the mythologies of the whole continent, arranged first by region, second by theme. It is a formidable undertaking. The author's clear mind and style keep it from becoming a thicket of complications. The introduction provides a lucid short history of how and when and why and by whom these oral literatures were written down and translated. From schoolcraft, our one-man Brothers Grimm, through the magnificent salvage work of Boas and his students and colleagues, both Indian and non-Indian, through the Benedictine school of myth as key to culture, Bierhorst brings us up to the recent studies of the performer and the performance. In other words, the artist and the art. Del Himes and others, by bringing sensitive and informed linguistic and literary criticism to bear on the artless and formless myths of the savage, have revealed wonderful sophistications of structure and richness of meaning. Oddly, Bierhorst scarcely mentions the structuralist analysis of myth. I found the monumental volumes of Levi-Strauss's mythologies mentioned only once, in a back-of-the-book note. Does anybody else miss the lowly footnote? Does anybody else get tired of turning back and forth trying to find the notes to the chapter you're in the middle of, except you've forgotten the number of the chapter and lose your place looking for the notes in the back, and it all ends up more like beating eggs with a whisk than reading a book? Bierhorst also chooses not to mention the secondary collections of Native American myths, those reworked from the originals, like Theodora Kroeber's Inland Whale, or gathered directly from the written sources, like Gerald Ramsay's Coyote Was Going There, or based immediately upon oral performance, like Dennis Tedlock's presentation of Zuni Tales in Finding the Center. The notes in the back refer only to chapter bibliographies listing the original sources. There is a courtesy in this towards the originators and true owners of the myths, in leaving out all middlemen as far as possible. But the paraphernalia of the notes is pretty formidable for the untrained reader, and the book, being a survey of a vast wealth of material, surely will often serve not only as an end in itself, but as an introduction. Readers will want to go on from Bierhorst's synopses and descriptions of myths, but few will know how to cope with the great gray-green volumes of the Bureau of American Ethnology, or how to find the other primary sources, mostly available only in major libraries. A fuller bibliography, a descriptive or evaluative guide to the many secondary collections of Native American myths, would have added greatly to the value of the book. Bierhorst might even have begun steering us away from the silly and patronizing versions, the kind the newspapers dug up when Mount St. Helens erupted. We were told then how St. Helens, Mount Hood, and Mount Adams were the beautiful maiden Lewitt, and the braves Y. East and Klickitat, who quarreled over her. The word maiden making it clear that this was quaint, the hyphens making it clear that Indians could not pronounce words of more than one syllable, and so forth. But now, listen to a story being told the way these stories were told. At night, in winter, and if you don't listen, grandmother will pinch you. She saw a hare. She took it up, looked at it, looked at the hare. One hare. She looked at the hare she had found. Whose hare, I want to know. She looked at it long, looked at the hare. One long hare. The woman thought, whose hare? She thought. That is a California story. Things in California used to move at their own sweet pace. Gertrude Stein grew up in California, too. Bierhorst gives us only that passage, and few retellings would have the courage to keep to that slow, oral rhythm. But there is a magic at work there in the words, in the repetitions, the circling gait, which is as essential as the plot, the fearful incest story of Loon Woman. In giving us an overview of the mythologies of so many different cultures, Beerhorst can usually give us only the plot, the gist, the marrow without the bones, as it were. Even so, even in synopsis, many of the stories are moving and fascinating. And Beerhorst's descriptions of the background in history, the connections and crossovers of the myths and mythologies, and his glimpses of the world views of the various peoples and regions are lucid and thoughtful. The mythology of North America may not be a landmark, but it is a shapely and solid stepping stone. Perhaps a more valuable thing than a landmark, after all.